You're listening to the Triangle Radio Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the March 2018 and April 2018 issues of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair Part A. Here's the continuation of The Life He Designed by James Reginato, with photos by Jonathan Becker. Beyond the real estate, there is Delhi Valley's fleet. The exteriors of his chopper and his jet are painted in DDV's signature yellow and green striped livery, which also adorns his luggage and many of his other accoutrements. Inside, the upholstery is of glove-soft leather. Derek Lamb, a former creative director for Todd's, once said that flying in Diego's helicopter was like being in a handbag. Next photos, the Wow Factory. The Todd's Factory in Cassette de Tête. The family living room at Villa Palembaron. Clients' shoe forms at the factory. Emmanuel in his New York City loft. Designs for the Gomino shoe. The factory's Ranharad staircase. Villa Palembaron's helipad. Delhi Valley's grandfather's cobbler's bench. Displayed at the factory. Photos of stars wearing Todd's group offerings. Delhi Valley's office at the factory. A portrait of Andrea and son Leonardo in Andrea's factory office. And the factory's lobby. Best of all may be the boats. The Altair 3, a 194-foot, 8-stateroom yacht. And the Marlin. A 52-foot mahogany cruiser built in 1930 for Henry Ford's son Edsel and owned by the Kennedy family for 30 years. As president, John F. Kennedy used to hold cabinet meetings on board. Hyannisport is still the port name stenciled on its stern, though Capri is home to both vessels. Next photo, by the grace of Todd's, Delhi Valley at Rome's Colosseum, now being restored with the help of his $34 million pledge. He's a pirate in the best sense of the word, says Richard Gere, who has known Delhi Valley for 20 years or so. He's a complete original, completely independent, someone who invented himself and created a world as he wants it to be. His place on Capri, for all its sophistication and spectacular setting, is very relaxed and very soulful, user-friendly. His style is not frigid or florid. He's the most amazing nonpareil host, number one. He treats you like royalty, says venture capitalist Vivi Nevo. His English is not the most phenomenal. I can't understand half of what he says, but it doesn't matter. He's the most incredibly loyal friend. Diego is driven, a worker bee, Gere continues, but you don't get a sense that he has blinders on like some other workaholics. This is a guy who sees the world, is incredibly generous, and has a great sense of humor about himself. Not many people have all those things. Successful and international as Diego Delhi Valley has become, he's still a guy from the village, albeit one who generally comes and goes via helicopter. Today at Cassette, he's dropping in just for lunch at home, making the 300-mile flight from his office in Milan, which he does frequently. As soon as the Augusta Westland touches down, a convoy of 3 Range Rovers sprint out to the helipad on the estate and whisk DDV the short distance to the main house. Tutto sotto controllo. This time it's the butler saying those words, as he confidently inspects the dining table to make sure it's perfectly set before the boss sits down. The line seems to be a mantra around here. Certainly, Diego Della Valle has built his empire by being a master of control. For proof, one need only visit his main factory, which is just a 5-minute drive from his house. A gleaming 270,000-square-foot marble palace designed by Barbara and a team of architects. And opened in 1998, it is set amid a beautifully landscaped olive grove, along with two other buildings added more recently. Pristinely white and clean inside, the facility seems more like an art museum than a factory, with some 300 artisans in lab coats producing about 2 million pairs of shoes a year. It's an incredibly well-oiled operation. Each Comino shoe, for example, goes through more than 100 steps and uses 35 pieces of leather. All Todd's products are 100% made in Italy. Once boxed, the moccasins and other products are shipped all over the world, from Chicago to Shanghai. A third of Todd's group's revenues come from Asia. You used to be able to tell where someone was from by looking at him. Now you don't know, says Della Valle. With my customers today, there's not much difference in lifestyle, whatever country they live in. These people are international. I'm a guy with two souls, one international and one provincial, he adds. Living in the village, you smell the simple life. This is still the center of my world. It keeps my feet on the ground. He still goes to the same cafe he went to as a kid, has the same friends, tells the same bad jokes, confirms Emmanuel. Only the square footage has changed. Amy Fine Collins writes this Vanity Fair spotlight, out for a spin. Photograph by Pari Dugovic. Carousel director Jack O'Brien. Stars Jesse Mueller and Renee Fleming. And choreographer Justin Peck. Photographed at Jane's Carousel in Brooklyn. Certain that Richard Rodgers could never top the 1943 masterpiece, Oklahoma, Samuel Goldwyn advised the composer to shoot himself. But with 1945's Carousel, Rodgers and librettist partner Oscar Hammerstein II surpassed even their own ambitious expectations. Rodgers later reflected that Carousel, his favorite show, came very close to opera. Now, exactly 73 years after the musical's debut, producers Scott Rudin and Roy Furman, with director Jack O'Brien, have revived the epic classic, opening on April 12th at Manhattan's Imperial Theater. And making good on Rodgers' lofty estimation of Carousel, the saga of the doomed love between Julie, a mill worker, and Billy, a carnival barker, they have cast the revered lyric soprano Renee Fleming in the role of Julie's cousin, Nettie. Of her maiden foray into Broadway musical theater, Fleming says, "It's a luxury for me to be able to focus on one thing for such a long period of time." Accustomed to projecting her voice over the orchestra and in a foreign language, she says, "Fleming will instead perform with electronic amplification and in a main accent. I've had to rethink how I sing," she notes. "So affecting are Carousel's celebrated tunes. They give me goosebumps," says Jesse Mueller, who plays Julie. "Rodgers and Hammerstein's music is satisfying to sing," she observes, "because it is so rich melodically." Among the many other enchantments of Carousel is its extended ballet sequence, a huge moment in terms of dance storytelling, says choreographer Justin Peck. Collaborating on the production, Peck remarks, has been super exciting, inspiring, and intimidating. There is so much talent in the room. fashion play, Spring 2018. The stages of New York and London are alive with talent. 12 actors and a playwright posing for Patrick Demarchelais showcase the subtle drama of their distinctive styles. Interviews by Krista Smith. Styled by Jessica Deal. Noma Dumezweni, Hometown, London. Play, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, a play featuring the book series' central characters as adults. Role, Hermione Granger. Theater, Lyric Theater on Broadway. Stage performers who inspire you, many, including Lucien Mezmati, Denise Gough, Martina Laird, Mike Noble, Ronki Adekologio, Sheila Atim, Ben Whishaw, Harriet Walter. Pre-performance ritual changes from job to job, but it's the moment I walk through the stage door, the ritual of movement, meeting, and saying hellos and dressing up, which leads to the beginner's call. I never get tired of that. Matt Bomer, Hometown, St. Louis and Spring, Texas. Play, The Boys in the Band, the 50-year-old drama that explores the lives of gay men. Role, Donald, an underachieving urban refugee. Theater, The Booth Theater on Broadway. First play you saw that made an impact, Robert Falls' 1999 production of Death of a Salesman. Stage performers who inspire you, Mark Rylance, Ian McKellen, Nathan Lane, Judy Dench, Billy Crudup, Viola Davis, and Laurie Metcalf. Why this play now? It's important to remember the emotional fervor that was boiling up just before the Stonewall riots. Kandula Rashad, Hometown, New York. Play, George Bernard Shaw's St. Joan. Role, Joan of Arc. Theater, Manhattan Theater Club on Broadway. Stage performer who inspires you, Viola Davis. Do you believe in theatrical superstitions? Let's just say I will always refer to a certain play as the Scottish play inside of a theater. Why this play now? Because there could not be a better time to tell a story about a young woman who needed no permission from any person or institution to have a deeply rooted connection to the divine and her very own self. John McCrae, Hometown, Hackney, London. Play, Everybody's Talking About Jamie, a new musical based on a documentary about a teen drag queen. Role, Jamie. Theater, Apollo Theater, London. Stage performer who inspires you, Sophie Okonedo. Pre-performance ritual, I lie on the floor in the dark and listen to A Song for You by Donny Hathaway. Why this play now? It's exactly what this world needs now, in more ways than one. Lucien Mezmati, Hometowns, Harare, Zimbabwe, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and London, England. Play, Amadeus, Peter Schaeffer's play about the rivalry between composers Wolfgang Mozart and Antonio Salieri. Role, Salieri. Theater, National Theater, London. Pre-performance ritual, costume always goes on at the very last minute. I don't like hanging around in someone else's clothes. Why this play now? Because envy, lust, greed, and jealousy never, ever go out of fashion, ever. Belle Poli, Hometown, London. Play, lobby hero Kenneth Lonergan's dark comedy set in the lobby of a Manhattan apartment building. Role, Dawn, a rookie police officer. Theater, Helen Hayes Theater on Broadway. First play you ever saw that made an impact, Julius Caesar at the Dunmar Warehouse, directed by Phyllida Lloyd, was the first time I'd ever seen a play with an all-female cast. It was also the first time I understood Shakespeare. It blew my mind. Stage performer who inspires you, Noma Dumezweni. Andrew Garfield, hometown, Surrey, England. Play, the revival of Tony Kushner's epic Angels in America. Role, Prior Walter, a young AIDS patient who has visions of an angel. Theater, Neil Simon Theater on Broadway. First play you saw that made an impact. Mnemonic by Complicité Theater Company in London. Stage performer who inspires you, Mark Rylance. All the actors in this production of Angels in America, Ben Platt. Why this play now? This play has medicine for every symptom of the sickness we are experiencing in the world right now. It can bring us back to ourselves and each other. Haley Kilgore, hometown, Happy Valley, Oregon. Play, Once on This Island, a musical love story. Role, Timone, a poor young woman who falls for a man of higher social standing. Theater, Circle in the Square Theater on Broadway. First play you saw that made an impact, The Piano Lesson. Stage performer who inspires you, Viola Davis is an actress who just tells the truth. She doesn't do any of the extra stuff. She commands the space with her voice and her honesty. Denise Gough, hometown, Wherever I Live at Any Given Time. Play, Angels in America. Role, Harper Pitt, wife of Roy Cohn's closeted clerk. Theater, Neil Simon Theater on Broadway. First play you saw that made an impact, Electra at Drama School. Stage performers who inspire you, Kingsley Benadire, Ria Zimetrowicz, Michael Murphy, Cillian Murphy, Billy Piper, Noma Dumezweni, the entire cast of People, Places, and Things, my angels, comrades, and many, many more. Why this play now? Donald Trump. Jamie Parker, hometown, London. Play, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Role, Harry Potter. Theater, Lyric Theater on Broadway. First play you saw that made an impact, Henry V. Stage performer who inspires you, Roger Allam. Pre-performance ritual, it's mostly trying to figure out when the right time is to eat. Ayad Akhtar, hometown, New York. Play, Junk, a drama inspired by Michael Milken. Role, playwright. Theater, Vivian Beaumont Theater, New York. First play you saw that made an impact, Mary Poppins. Stage performer who inspires you, Cherry Jones. Pre-performance ritual, sharpening my pencils and popping a breath mint before settling into my seat to take notes for previews. Why this play now? Because we are increasingly defined and limited by the forces of finance and don't even realize it. Laura Donnelly, hometown, Belfast. Play, The Ferryman, a drama set in Northern Ireland during the Troubles. Role, Caitlin Kearney, the widow of a man disappeared by the Irish Republican Army. Theater, Gielgud Theater, London. Stage performer who inspires you, Mark Rylance. Do you believe in theatrical superstitions? Not really, but I don't go out of my way to test them. And Bryan Cranston, hometown, Los Angeles. Play, stage adaptation of the classic film Network. Role, Anchorman Howard Beale. Theater, Littleton Theater, London. First play you saw that made an impact? Hair on Broadway. Naked people on stage. Now that was impactful. Stage performer who inspires you, Mark Rylance. Pre-performance ritual, vocal warm-ups, alphabet run-through, and repeating the phrase, she stood in the stairway mimicking him, hiccuping, and inimitably welcoming him in. Now we move on to the April 2018 issue of Vanity Fair, which features Lena Waithe on the cover. Here are some of the contributors to this month's issue. William D. Cohan. In The Devil to Pay, special correspondent William D. Cohan examines billionaire Eddie Lampert's controversial efforts to salvage Sears and Kmart, much diminished brands that have faced particularly hard times in the Amazon era. Lampert is an intellectual and a true believer, says Cohen, to whom the retail mogul gave his first in-depth interview in 15 years. An investor with a smaller mind probably would have pulled the plug already. Annie Leibovitz, A photo essay can seem too intimate, but Lena was fearless about opening up her life for our photographs, says contributing photographer Annie Leibovitz. For this month's cover shoot, Lena Waithe, the Emmy-winning writer and actor, showed Leibovitz around her Los Angeles apartment, including her resplendent shoe closet. Leibovitz also photographed Jane Fonda for the Vanity Fair portrait in this issue. Jacqueline Woodson, in Ready for Lena, National Book Award-winning author Jacqueline Woodson highlights many of the formative influences, both cultural and personal, she shares with her subject, screenwriter, producer, actor, Lena Waithe. Writing about Lena felt like coming home to my younger self, says Woodson, whose new young adult novel, Harbor Me, will be out this summer. When I found out it was going to be the cover story, I was like, yes, that's exactly where she belongs. Mark Seliger. What began as Mark Seliger's bold experiment is now a much-anticipated tradition, and the photographer returned for the fifth year in a row to create, with Instagram, his instant portrait studio inside the Vanity Fair Oscar party. As the Hollywood elite streamed in for their portraits, which begin in this issue, Seliger captured the glamour and the surprising intimacy of the biggest party of the year. There's a beauty to the spontaneity of it, he says. A book of Seliger's most iconic portraiture comes out in May. Clara Bingham, 50 years after the Columbia University student uprising, journalist Clara Bingham tracked down 25 of the landmark protest participants to assemble the oral history in this issue. The Parkland High School shooting took place when I was nearing the end of my interviews, says Bingham. These brave high school students, who had the moral authority that adults could never muster, took to the streets. I was watching history repeat itself. Bingham's book, Witness to the Revolution, came out in 2016.
Thank you.
Now, from Radhika Jones comes this month's editor's letter. On a cold day at the end of January, I flew to Los Angeles for my first Vanity Fair cover shoot. Our subject had initially caught my attention through her television work, playing Denise, the wise, occasionally wise-ass lesbian sidekick to Aziz Ansari's Dev on the Netflix series Master of None, and then through her speech at the Emmys last fall, when she became the first black woman to be honored for outstanding writing for a comedy series. The things that make us different, those are our superpowers, she said, accepting the award for an episode in which Denise comes out, a story based on her own experience. The world would not be as beautiful as it is if we weren't in it. When I thought about the kind of person I'd like to see on the cover of Vanity Fair, I thought about Lena Waithe, a member of the new creative elite, remaking entertainment for her generation. And now here I was, watching Annie Leibovitz focus her lens on Lena. The truth is, Lena made my choice easy. She's been busy since her Emmys speech went viral. She's the critic's darling and her big screen debut as Ake in Steven Spielberg's sci-fi fantasy Ready Player One. Her new series, The Chi, debuted on Showtime in January and was renewed for a second season. She joined Time's Up, working on behalf of women and the LGBT community in the quest for more equitable representation and compensation in Hollywood. The pilot of her show, Twenties, has been picked up by TBS, and she's turning her unofficial mentoring program into a pipeline for writers of color looking to break into Hollywood. This is Lena Waithe's year, and we are delighted to mark it. What kind of writer do you enlist to write about a writer? In this case, one who's having a bit of a year herself. Jacqueline Woodson, the National Book Award-winning author of Brown Girl Dreaming, who was named the National Ambassador for Young People's Literature by the Library of Congress in January. She is now traversing the country to address young audiences, but found time in her schedule to see Lena at Sundance and in Los Angeles. Jackie's profile conveys a deep connection between observer and subject, as do Annie's photographs, the result of a day spent at home with Lena, during which our cover star made breakfast for her fiancé, producer Alana Mayo, and worked on her laptop, and like any sensible TV aficionado, watched an episode of the Mary Tyler Moore Show. I flew to L.A. again more recently to host the Vanity Fair Oscar party. It was a night of celebration, with moments of glory and introspection captured in photographer Mark Seliger's studio portraits. The news out of the movie industry over the past 9 months has been grim at times, but the optimism in the air at our party was infectious. I don't think I was the only person who left that night feeling excited about the stories a new guard in Hollywood has to tell. I'm excited, too, about the stories in this issue. Emily Jane Fox checks in on the dilemmas of Ivanka Trump after her first year as an official advisor to the president. William Languish explores the most inexplicable sinking of the cargo ship El Faro in the Bahamas in 2015. Penny Junard takes us behind the scenes of the wedding of Camilla and Charles, a union the palace fought for years and that Charles himself was wary of. Meanwhile, we royal watchers are counting the days until the next Windsor wedding in May. William D. Cohan talks to hedge fund billionaire Eddie Lampert, sitting for his first in-depth interview in 15 years about the ill-fated merger of Kmart and Sears. Also, in a startling exclusive, Cohen tracks down the ringleader of the aborted 2003 kidnapping that nearly cost Lampert his life. As a new student-led movement rises up around gun control, Clara Bingham speaks to the leaders of the Columbia University student uprising, which happened 50 years ago this spring, and Cecile Richards, the outgoing president of Planned Parenthood, leaves us with her thoughts on life, liberty, and the Supreme Court. Here at Vanity Fair, we're still just starting our new chapter, but we share Richard's current state of mind, fired up, ready to go. Now, a Vanity Fair portrait from Krista Smith, John David Washington, with photograph by Williamson Hirakawa. John David Washington, age 33, provenance Los Angeles. Growing up, Washington waited to act, despite being the son of Denzel and Pauletta. I knew every one of my father's lines in Glory. I broke the VHS tape, but I hid my love of acting to make it as my own man. Football was the best route to obtain my independence. He was signed by the NFL's St. Louis Rams in 2006. I was in a whole other business, but I always wanted to dip into the arts. My parents were 100% supportive. My mom's my biggest fan. My father's tough love. HBO, his on-screen break was in familiar territory as wide receiver Ricky Jarrett on Ballers, returning with a fourth season this summer. I'm nothing like this guy, I swear, but it's therapeutic playing Ricky. There's something deep down in me that I'm putting into this character. The Dance. In January, Washington made his Sundance Film Festival debut to raves as a criminal, Bobo, in Monster, and as Dennis, a Brooklyn cop in Monsters and Men. It was like a championship weekend, pushing the work forward and supporting everybody's films. In the works, this year Washington appears on the big screen in Old Man and the Gun, starring Robert Redford, and in Spike Lee's Black Klansman as Ron Stallworth. I was overjoyed to help tell his story. Lee is so confident in who he picks that, as his actor, your confidence soars. from the Vanity Fair Agenda, Advertising, Promotion, Events, and Opportunities. Experience Canada, a place to push your limits. Across the border to the north lies a place rich with experiences that will challenge you physically, culturally, and even emotionally. Eat, drink, and discover the world's most diverse cities alongside the people who call them home. Open your mind to a place that celebrates experience, difference, and embraces adventure. Start your journey here. www.keepexploring.ca. Shop. Battle-hardened, polo players endure a sport made up of equal parts elegance and violence. When Swiss watchmaker Richard Mille set out to create the RM5301 Tourbillon timepiece for top-ranked polo player Pablo MacMadonna to wear during matches, durability was paramount. The result? A first in horology is a timepiece encased in indestructible carbon TPT with a cable-suspended movement visible through laminated sapphire glass. Only 30 pieces will be made. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service and broadcasting from its Raleigh, North Carolina studios. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Standard Time, or rather Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.